There is a place where fears and fantasies get weighed on substance alone. Legends and lores are examined in a fresh light. Conspiracy theory meets conspiracy fact. Abandon your defenses. Embrace the possibilities. Step beyond the threshold into other realms.
I'm glad they're ready to fall asleep and I tell a pulse.
They can choose whatever they want.
About 3 feet tall.
Change UFO activity.
And it remembers everything that ever happened.
And then there was one point where I heard a growl.
Some UFOs when we were there.
I want to know the truth.
You're listening to Threshold Radio. I'm Anthony Kay. With me is Sam Maranto and John Stevenson, and this is part two of our show tonight. Right after the quick commercial break that we're going to have in a second here, we're going to start off with Suzanne Taylor, and that's a brand new segment, brand new part of the show, and we hope you enjoy that. Also, we have an abduction case, a very interesting abduction case, so stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss this part two of our show tonight. We're going to start off right away with Suzanne Taylor right after this quick commercial break. You're listening to Threshold Radio.
We're from America. We're from America. Where we eat our young.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds Into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit ufo-info.com.
Welcome back to Thresholds and Other Realms, and with us we have our special guest Suzanne Taylor, who's going to be a regular now with a new segment called Outside the Box. How you doing, Suzanne?
I'm doing fine. I'm actually excited about a whole new platform to deliver on.
Yeah, oh, and I didn't mention the Crop Circle Queen. I'm sorry.
Yes, that is my moniker all over the place.
And yes, and I posted that on Facebook. I told you. I told people they must pay homage to the Crop Circle Queen.
Love it.
Do you want to explain the concept of this new little segment we're going to start doing with you?
Well, you know, I have been working with crop circles for actually decades now, and I have a movie, What on Earth, Inside the Crop Circle Mystery, that I've been going on a lot of radio shows and talking about and appearing on various conference things. So my movie is juicy and effective at waking people up to some idea that this little reality we're in here is not all there is to the universe, and that there is other intelligence in the universe, and getting us out of our small-mindedness in which we're so violent with one another and destructive to the planet, and just opening our minds to a bigger reality. So the crop circles have been my platform for doing that for the last year and a half. And even before that, I've been, you know, part of that crop circle world for decades now. But, you know, really my interest isn't in the crop circles. My interest is in what they represent, that we are in a much larger game than we acknowledge or live by and you know, make our reality up by. God, that's kind of a convoluted sentence. But now we're going to go moving out into things other than crop circles that also are, as we're calling this segment, outside the box, that make you think beyond the little narrow confines of what we sometimes called scientism. Science runs our world.
Right.
You can't put it under a
microscope.
That's
the idea of our entire show.
Yeah, well, this is the trap that we're in, and that there's so much contradiction to, and yet we still, you know, run our world based on this smaller viewpoint. So what I'm going to be doing here in this segment is bringing you different sorts of things that really, in some sense, by our definition of reality, can't be, but they are. I think of it as kind of a complement or parallel or I guess, parallel, or I don't quite know what the right words are, but to this Ancient Alien series on TV now that I'm actually in, in the Crop Circle segment. I'm a Crop Circle expert. But they're talking generally. In fact, it was unusual they had a Crop Circle segment because Crop Circles are happening now. What Ancient Aliens is all about, other than that, is kinds of things that we have to puzzle over that are left here on Earth, like pyramids, obviously, and things like Stonehenge, and where did they come from? And we didn't have technology back then, so they're puzzling over where the ancient things came from. But what I'll be talking about is things that are with us now, both things that happen in my world, friends of mine happen to me, and also things that I'm just a snoop for this sort of thing. So things that are happening that have been reported, and not sketchy things, things that are for real that everybody accepts are have happened but can't explain.
Just news of the weird, unusual, right?
News is weird, right? That's what one of my friends suggested I call that. And everybody said, well, that's not serious enough. Well, okay. So we're very serious, but, you know, we like to entertain ourselves also. And so these are things to scratch your head over, but to scratch your head to open your mind.
Right.
Gosh, there's a line. We should remember that one. Scratch your head to open your mind. So, you know, like, how can these things be? Because, you know, the rationale for all of it, or the reason for all of it, and the reason I'm interested in the circles, is because we really need to change the way we think. And it's no secret now that we're in big trouble. We're in trouble from natural causes, oil pollution, things like that, and we're in trouble from the things that cause ourselves, the wars. I mean, why are we still doing such a primitive thing when we're so sophisticated technologically? And because we're so sophisticated, unless we have an understanding of a world, unless we have a worldview that's not based on money, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, where we have some kind of larger perspective in which we see ourselves as one humanity, in which we have compassion as a, you know, kind of overriding principle rather than greed, we stand some danger of destroying ourselves. I mean, species have come and gone, and there's no, you know, no saying we're going to last forever. And conceivably, at our own hands, you know, there's nothing we can do if another ice age comes along, but although, of course, we may be encouraging that.
Well, that could happen, too, the way things are going. But it does look like we're actually going to end up wiping ourselves out.
Well, there's definitely a danger of that. This is not just idle chatter anymore. And so, you know, sometimes I get this image of some horrible thing happening that we've caused, you know, some hydrogen chain reaction explosion and half the world blows up. And then we go, oh, my God, why didn't we get rid of those things? Why? How did we do this? We saw it potentially coming, and you know. So, my whole perspective for many years actually has been: can't we find some nonviolent way to shake ourselves up, not shock and awe, in a nonviolent way? Something that, and that's why I tuned into the Crop Circle. Because if we would accept the fact that we're not making them, and the evidence all points to that, but if we would accept the fact that we're not making them, that would be the shock and awe in a positive way that would really get us all to think again. Who are we? What are we doing here? What? Oh, we're in relation to something bigger than ourselves. It would humble us, and it would make us one humanity in a kind of a worldwide curiosity and conversation about, oh, we're being visited. Who are they? What shall we do? And all of humanity would be in this gorgeous, peaceful conversation. Well, you know, so much for the sort of background of the segment, which is all about what is taking off from Crop Circles as my sort of main squeeze over the last period of time as a kind of vehicle.
Thus your name, the Crop Circle Queen, too, of course.
Indeed. So I really love having this expertise, you might say. It grounds me in absolutely knowing that there is more to reality than most of us accept, and that it's worth really devoting all my energy to engaging with the world at trying to open everybody's mind to this other level. You know, just very valuable to absolutely know something, and I stand on this knowing that these crop circles are not being made by us, other than, of course, the ones that are hooks. But right. We have a real phenomenon here. So, my platform of certainty from I then look at the rest of the world, but I've always been interested in kinds of things that don't fit in with ordinary reality. And in fact, my blog, which is called conversation.org, I frequently speak about, and in fact on this show I'll bring up, we'll deal with some of the things that I post, because whenever I find something that'll shake people up and that'll make people think, how can that be? But there it is. I'm fascinated by those things.
So
and,
am I.
Yes, I'm a real snoop for that kind of stuff. And it doesn't have to happen, just in the outside world. It happens around me. And the thing that I thought I would start with, as probably all of us, I wonder if you ask every person, has anything ever happened to you that's possible? Actually, that's a good question. I think maybe I'll start using that in my just everyday reality.
Well, it's true, too. We've all had those moments where something happens and you're like, well, that just can't happen, but yet it did.
Right. Right. So I think maybe I'll become an even greater snoop for that and intentionally collect those things and then speculate about, well, how can that be and what does it indicate? And, these aren't the purpose of all of this isn't just to, entertain us and make us, well, what do you know? But to really make us think,
right.
How can these things be? Because we really do have to rethink the entire worldview that we're stuck in here. So I wanted to start actually with something that did happen directly to me. It's my experience.
There you go.
And, really, so I thought that would be a good beginning. So here's my story. I used to entertain, and I say used to because he comes to the United States a lot, and he hasn't lately, an Italian man named Giorgio Cerquetti. Well, he's the Italian Mr. New Age. He's into everything over there, and so he was involved with producing a conference. He wasn't actually producing it, but because he's this guy who gets his fingers into everything, his fingers were into this conference, being produced by a group in Italy. I believe the name of it is ASCII, A-S-C-I. I think it's a magazine, and it's basically about astrology. But they were producing a conference that was about everything that, sort of off charts. And he invited me to come to Italy. This is the background of the story, because the story actually happens in my own house in L.A., but I'm telling you who Giorgio is. So he invited me. My house has been a kind of a gathering place in Los Angeles for progressive people, people who think outside the box. And for years, I've had guests in here. I've had a little salon for years, where the most interesting people who come through LA end up in my house, in my living room, and then everybody's very happy to be on my guest list. Being on Suzanne Taylor's guest list is a high, good in Los Angeles. So Giorgio, having visited several times and being my house guest here several times, got to observe my world here. And when he was involved in this conference, there was a slot that they needed to fill called, what was the name of it? Oh, I should have the name of it. Never mind. Sorry. The Future of the New Age. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
And so he said to me, Suzanne, if anybody would know the future of the New Age, it has to be you. So I want to bring you over to Italy, which they did. Paid all my expenses. It was really quite wonderful. So that's a little background on my relationship with Giorgio. But he is quite a character. He So this story involves one of his visits to L.A. Now, one of the things that I was doing with Giorgio, who has this, you know, Snoopy fingers in many realities in Italy, one of the things that Giorgio does is he finds books in English and has them translated into Italian. And New Age is his category, loosely speaking, you know, and I'm speaking about all these new things, different things that, you know, are part of our world now. And so whenever he would come to L.A., he would, you know, go into my bookcase or whatever, ask me, what do I think, kind of book, what books would I recommend? And there are many books now in Italian because I recommended them to Giorgio. So he walks into my house. This is a visit that he's making to me. And he walks in with his, now you have to get this picture. Giorgio is a short, little bit paunchy, middle-aged Italian guy. but full of pep and vinegar and energy. And he walks into my house with his ex-wife, a tall, willowy blonde Italian, kind of most Italians, I think, have dark hair. Well, some Italians are blonde and, you know, that sort of whatever. But that would be Giorgio. He would be married to a tall, willowy blonde, which he was. So, but now it's his ex-wife, but they're still friendly. So they walk into the house. The next day, they're going to go to the airport and pick up his current girlfriend, another tall, willowy blonde. So all of this is background to what happens when he walks into my door. So he walks into my door with Julia, his ex, tall, willowy blonde. And she has a briefcase in her hand in which she has books. She's a translator. She speaks Italian and English fluently. And one of the things, you know, she does in life is she translates these books that Giorgio provides for her, some of which he gets from me. Okay. So they walk in my door, and, you know, one of the first things he always asks me is, what do you recommend in the way of books? So I have a bookshelf with all of my friends' books. And so I walk over to the bookshelf, and I'm looking at the books, and I'm, you know, I think this book would be great in Italian. I think so. This would appeal to the Italian market. It's by a very good friend of mine, named Daphne, and so Daphne Kingma, Daphne Rose Kingma. Daphne has been on Oprah's show several times. She writes books about relationship and about love, and so her latest book, which hardcover, one of the main publishers put out this book, called The Men We Never Knew, and I'm thinking, oh, this would be a really good book. And I pull it out of the case, and I, okay, what do you think about this one, Giorgio? And guess what is in Julia's briefcase that she is in the middle of translating?
That book?
I kid you not, that book.
What are the odds of that?
Well, I'll tell you. I went online to look up some odds, and the one odds figure that I pulled up was that in 2009, which is the last year for which there were statistics of how many new books there were that had come on the market, 288,355 new books that had come on the market. That doesn't include 2008, 2007. I'm not sure if I was in the current year for Julia, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
We're out of that many, what are the coincidence odds that I'm going to put my finger, my hand, on the very book that is in Julia's briefcase? Well, it's not possible. How could this possibly be? Well, I asked my friend Russell Targ what he thought about that. And Russell Targ is somebody who has books. Russell was the head of SRI, Stanford Research Institute, 20-year program the CIA had about remote viewing. He's the big remote viewing guy. And he has done many experiments in paranormal sort of thing. Uri Geller was one of his subjects that he did a lot of fascinating experiments with. Another segment, we'll talk about some of the experiments he did with Uri Geller, which will blow your mind.
Oh, okay.
But so Russell, you know, and Russell will come up with things like how you can, statistically, when they do experiments, you know the future. Well, you can't know the future. Wait a minute. These experiments show you do know the future. So I said, Russell, what could this be? Well, I'm not going to tell you that Russell came up with a conclusion. And did I say that actually, you know, it's kind of fun to ask Russell, because some of his books were books, a couple of them that I gave to Giorgio, who he did translate.
Yeah.
And not only that, but he brought Russell over to Italy a couple times to do workshops. So that was very nice. I made that connection for them. So I thought, oh, Russell, perfect person to ask about what is this thing with this book with Daphne and Giorgio. So he said, well, let's see. First of all, let's reduce the odds. He said, there's what books you would logically be giving Giorgio a New Age book. So when you're talking about, let's just presume it was that year, and I think it was. I think that was a new book that had come out that year. So we're talking about approximately 300,000 new books. How many of them would categorize as New Age? I don't know the answer, by the way, because I can't guess it. But whatever it is, you've still got, you know, huge numbers, thousands. I said, well, Russell, great. But, you know, so reduce it to 50,000. You know, how come I pulled out that one book out of whatever, 50,000? And he said, well, now we would get into the realms of thought and the reading of mind.
Right, that's
so
what I was going to say.
Julia knows she has that book in her briefcase. So in the mental arena that the electrons are floating around, Julia knows that. So I go over to the case. But wait a minute. These are my friend's books. I maybe have 30 books in the bookcase.
Mm-hmm.
How come I had that book that was in Julia's briefcase, even if it's in her briefcase, and now I go over to my bookshelf, and I know which book to pull out. How come she has that book, and I have that book? Well, I don't know. We couldn't get past that. Do you have any? I mean, you're a snoop out there in the metaphysical world.
That's actually
Do you have any ideas?
That's true, because I was going to say she might have thought book when you said book, but the odds of you having that particular book she had,
exactly,
that's just...
Exactly.
That, I can't actually explain that part of it.
I know, and yet at some level, there has to be something going on more than coincidence, don't you think?
Oh, things happen for reasons.
I mean, I don't know what it is. I can't get my mind beyond it.
I mean, because...
I do know...
No, I was going to say, the first part of that, you know, you said you were going to look for a book. She probably was thinking books, and you probably just pulled it out of her head, whether you knew it or not. But, you know...
Well, that's what Russell is suggesting. He's suggesting that once she had that book in her briefcase, she's thinking that book, and I go to my case, and I pull out that book, which explains at some level.
Well, yeah, but a very small level. I mean,
but a small level, right. I think about the fact that at that level, at least, we have discovered in what we now understand about quantum reality that if a couple of electrons are connected in a physical way and then you somehow separate them, this is the science world that I hopefully am not doing terrible injustice to,
yeah.
But somehow you separate those electrons and you put one of them on the other side of the world, they still have a relationship. One of them... will impact the other one. So this is this whole interconnectedness,
right,
that we live in, which, you know, hopefully will be the seed of establishing ourselves as compassionate humanity, where our interconnectedness is how we operate rather than our dog-eat-doggedness, you know. Right, well, this is indeed, you know, what science is establishing for us, and thank God, you know, science is our God these days, so good that they get into these things that are really stretching the parameters of science these days, which is, you know, very fortunate. But I still, you know, just marvel at this. I think about this incident a lot. It happened a few years ago, and I think, how could this be? What accounts for this? And, you know, then we would also be dealing in the synchronicities in life that Jung was so, interested in, and how these odd things that, you know, just can't be come to pass. And these are the kinds of things that, you know, we'll actually be talking about in the segments to come. And also, you know, your listeners include some pretty savvy people. So I would also invite the responses or ideas or whatever from your listening audience, and maybe we all can get smarter, you know, use each other.
That would be ideal. I know we've all had these odd things happen, but I've got to admit that one you just talked about, it's got my mind reeling right now. I'm trying to figure out a logical reason for that.
I know, it is just so beyond the beyond, really. Really. So anyway, and you know, another good thing, even when we don't know the explanation, we can't wrap up a little case here with a solution, you know. But even the fact that we live in a universe that is so awesome and can really contain these inexplicable kinds of things is really good for us to kind of rest in, rather than the sense of arrogance and certainty that we're the big cheese and we know everything, and that leads us into such really arrogant behavior, which is, you know, at the root of all kind of violence that we create in our world. It's just unbelievable to me that we still make war. How can we do this? How can we send people to kill each other? It's just unthinkable. In some future time, they're going to look back on that like slavery. How could people do that, enslave each other? How can we kill each other legally and, you know, as a methodology? It's just beyond me. I mean,
alien races out there that want to make contact with us are having second thoughts. That's why they haven't done it. They're like, these people are barbarians. Do we really want to include them?
Well, indeed, you know, that it's kind of an answer to why don't they land on the White House lawn. That's a UFO kind of question. Or why don't they make a crop circle on the White House lawn? But why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, we probably shoot them. I mean, we're not prepared for this. It's all science fiction. We're not. And that's why I love the circles, because from the circles you really can ascertain, without that kind of harsh confrontation with the other, you really can ascertain that there is another. And so once you have accepted that, I mean, if the world accepts that, if contacts were in headlines and we've established it via the crop circles, we haven't shaken anybody's hand, but we know that we are being engaged and we're being left messages, and that there is other intelligence in the universe. And once we have an opening to accept that, then, well, maybe they could land on the White House lawn. What would they give us? What would they deliver? Whereby, if we're resistant to them and we ridicule them and we mock them, and how are they going to help us? You know. We've got our door shut, you know. But once we open our door, whoa, what would come in, you know? So I like working toward that goal of, and then these things that are beyond us that can't be random. I mean, it's something's going on where that book was in her briefcase and I pulled it out of my case.
I know.
Something is bigger than we are, bigger than our very,
well,
very...
That's one of those ones we're not going to find an explanation for, because there isn't one.
Well, we just have to open our minds to there being much more going on than our objective science can define for us. And it's just good for us to have that open mindset, because that's where other things can come in that, you know, that we would be receptive to.
Right.
Witness crop circles and this vast intelligence that's, they're visiting us, we're not visiting them. How much could we learn from them about what's going on in the universe, and how did they do it, and, you know, how can we deal with global warming? They might know things we don't know. So it's very good for us to have our minds blown. So outside the box, we'll continually be deliver mind-blowing realities. Even if we can't explain them, just opening our mind to this bigger reality is just so good for us. So I hope that we'll be able to do that. And this is going to be kind of my new platform, going beyond the circles, which fortunately, you know, gives me a platform.
Right.
But, you know, I'm going to be the news of the weird lady, outside the box reality lady.
And hopefully we can get the audience to join in a bit. It's kind of hard to do sometimes, but hopefully they'll write in or call in and tell us their stories, because everyone's got this kind of stuff.
Yes, that would be quite wonderful to actually hear those things. You know, the crop circle world is pretty good. And there's one website, cropcircleconnector.com, that your audience could get on even now. And whatever the current year is, our circle's over for this year. They come in the spring, summer, and not so much fall, but spring and summer. And you can still see all the ones that came in 2011 without paying a fee. You pay a little fee if you want to get into the archives. But each circle gets paid. And then there are experts in different fields that are really plugged into this phenomenon, and they'll send in their, hey, I saw a formula for such and such in that circle, or, oh, look, the meaning of that is, look, they're pointing to 2012, by the way these symbols are, you know, whatever. People who know things from different sophisticated fields of endeavor do send in their kind of deciphering, you know, of within those circles. So your listeners, you know, who have had experiences, which would be interesting to hear about, but also who might have some expertise in the far-out kind of understandings that maybe they could offer, and, you know, that will build a body of knowledge here, hopefully. So many good possibilities here. I really look forward to all of
this. What I think of right offhand as you're talking is you've probably done this, a lot of us have, pick up the phone and actually already know who's on it before you answer. Have you had that happen to yourself?
Those are those kinds of things as well, yeah. Yes, that's kind of a everyday one, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that people don't realize it happens, but think about that logically. You know, how do you know that person is there with their mind? You hear them? I went so far as I used to when I was younger. I would pick up the phone before it rang and knew who it was, which used to blow people's minds.
right. Well, that's the kind of stuff that Russell Targ has experiments about, you know, and that proves that these kinds of things really occur, you know, that they do occur. So
right.
Now what, you know?
Yeah, when he gets some free time down the line, I know you said he's busy, I'd love to actually talk with him, because I got some questions. Like when I pick up the phone before it rings, in my head,
right.
I can see the person dialing me. That's how I get it. I'd love to know if that's something other people have experienced.
Wow, well, that sounds quite impressive. That does sound like beyond what, you know, there are people who do, you do hear, you know, that kind of idea. I know who's on the phone before I pick it up, but you can see them dialing. I think you're taking it a step further. Hey, maybe you're the big key psychic.
You know, the thing is like that, I can do those kind of things, but I can't control them. You know, they happen, but if I try to make them happen,
right.
And I can't.
Right.
It's one of those.
Right.
Well,
right, but the fact that you know that has happened to you, so you've got that little anchor in reality that says, wait a minute, you know, I know something that goes on outside the ordinary, conventional,
well,
you know,
I'll tell you the cool thing
about
that
possible.
Is when you're with people, and all of a sudden you reach over, I used to just reach over, pick up the phone and start talking, and I'd hang up, and they're like, you know, that never rang. And I'd be like, huh? And people would point it out to me.
I love it. You could do this segment.
Yeah.
Right.
That was when I was
younger. But that's perfect.
I think when you're younger, you have more, you're more receptive than you are when you get older, because I've lost things as I've aged.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of literature or whatever about how open children are, and then parents shut them down by saying, no, no, your imaginary friend is not real or whatever, you know. Anyway, it is a world beyond the world we live in, outside the box, and so this will be our little chat every once in a while. And
this will be our first one, and the next ones will be more direct into the strangeness. We don't have to
explain
the entire concept.
We won't do this huge setup each time, but I love thinking about these things, so hopefully we'll get the whole world thinking.
That'd be great. Well, Suzanne, it was great talking to you, and like we'll talk again next week, and we'll see what kind of odd, outside-the-box things happen to you.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Okay, Suzanne Taylor, everybody, we'll be right back. You're listening to Threshold Radio.
Some say it was a warning. Some say it was a sign. Standing right there when it came down from the sky. The way it spoke to us, you felt it from inside.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds Into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit UFO-info.
You're listening to Threshold Radio. I'm Anthony Kay. With me is Sam Maranto and John Stevenson. Right now we have Carla on the phone. Very interesting case from 1985, and Sam's talking to her right now. Go ahead, Sam.
So, Carla, we are talking about the very interesting aspect of here you are, you find yourself a day and a half later, about an hour's west of where you're supposed to be. And isn't there another interesting aspect of the very location that you found yourself at sometime later as being something of importance to you in your life later on?
Yes. I had married in May, and we had lived in the Utica area when we married, and we were looking for a nice rental home. And my husband at the time had talked to a friend of his and found a perfect home and took me to see it. This was 6 months after my encounter. And we get on Route 51 off of 80, and he takes a quick left, and there it was, the ranch home that he rented from the farmer, the Brown Ranch home.
So the very place that you were, what's the odds of that, right? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, Sam. Yes, with the peeling paint off the house, it was the exact house. There's a McDonald's there now. They actually relocated the house itself. They actually moved it.
Interesting. And,
very interesting. It caused a lot of trauma for me, and I was pregnant, so it didn't help the situation at all.
Now, you had, again, you've had multiple experiences, two of which I know of time loss. Can you tell us of the next unusual circumstance that happened to you and when it took place?
Yeah, that one is, my life was very, very much busier at the time of the second encounter of lost time, missing time. But this time, it was 1995, I believe. Early spring, 95, that's what we pinpointed it to, so, yeah. And that would have been a Saturday afternoon, you know, early evening.
And at that point, you're how old at that point? You have children, and it's later, you have responsibilities, a bunch of stuff going on. And where is it this takes place, that the missing time actually occurs?
This was a strange incident in the fact, in looking back at this, you know, because I've done a lot of writing, you know, to journal myself and try to figure things out myself. A friend of mine had moved into town from the country, and it was a Saturday afternoon. I worked at a credit union. We closed the place up at noon. I went over to see her new place off of Route 6, east of Spring Valley, and again, the Pooh, Illinois area. And I left her house. Now, I should have just gone maybe three or four houses. I would have been on Route 6. For whatever reason, I drove down to Water Street. I left her house. It was somewhat dusk. I stayed longer. I had a dress on. I had nylons. I was still after work. I don't normally dress up, but only for work. And for whatever reason, I went down towards Water Street. So I went down towards the Illinois River when I left her house. And like something, I don't know, I pulled over near the Peru Boat Club, and I know that area along the railroad track because I used to mushroom hunt there and go fishing down there. So for whatever reason, you know, I guess I must have decided to take the scenic route instead of just jumping on Route 6 and going directly to my home, which wasn't that far. And for whatever reason, that was it.
So here you are. You took a scenic route.
I went there, and that was it.
And where was it you found yourself, and how much time was lost?
Well, it was Saturday, and I wanted to get home Saturday night. I wanted to get out of my dress. I wanted to get some stuff done around the house. The kids were with their father for the weekend. Sunday, I had plans to do some early spring things around the outside of the house. So I definitely had plans. I was a very busy woman, always. And I found myself in an alley, which is very strange looking back on that now, because I was a few blocks over down the road of Water Street in an alley halfway up a hill on the other side of the railroad tracks. And it is the same road, this is unbelievable, it's the same side street that my 16-year-old daughter did not get in a vehicle one night and four of her friends drowned when they went off that railroad track and right into the Illinois River. They drowned and died years later.
Whoa.
Yes. And I woke up in the alley that was next to the side of the railroad tracks, right where they would have taken off, which is very strange.
Now, do you recall, say, for instance, point A, point B? Point A being where you have your memory, how far away is that? And point B, that location, how far would you say that is?
Doubtfully even a mile you could walk it.
Okay.
From the Peru Boat Club on the one side of the tracks that's near the river.
Yes.
To the alley on the other side of the tracks that is, you know, with the river right off. There's a very steep drop in the road. It goes straight down this road. It's a sharp angle onto Water Street.
Was there any unusual event, lights, sounds, even smells, anything, an unusual individual, anything in particular that, you know, this is my last, the last thing I remember that was striking and unusual, and then waking up?
Again, waking up, disheveled, disorientated, feeling grubby. I'm a very clean person, Sam, and that grubby feeling, and my nylons were twisted all around me, completely twisted. Completely twisted at the top, as though they weren't put upright. just, you know, what time is it? It was almost like a 24-hour period, because when this time I knew exactly where I was at the alley. Once I pulled forward out of the alley, I knew exactly where I was because I could see the river to my right. So I took a left to get up to Route 6.
So you're
directly home. not knowing what had happened and thinking that it was still Saturday night.
Okay, so
that's what I was thinking.
How much time lapsed totally?
It would have had to have been a pretty much 24-hour period, because when I got home, it was Sunday night. Okay. My ex-husband was there waiting with the kids, and I was not one to ever be late, ever. And even okay. after that time, never late. I'm very, very, very precise, you know. But he was waiting
now,
in the driveway with the kids. They were
again,
waiting like about a half
yeah.
hour.
So he was waiting patiently, or impatiently, whatever. But he was waiting because you were a half hour later. So, and you had,
what is he doing here? Is, you know,
yeah.
something yeah. must have happened. That's what I was thinking.
It's like, not again. right?
That was unbelievable. Yeah.
Now let's say you're first of all, no rhythm, reason, or rhyme for you taking that route, that scenic route. But you're under the assumption purely just because it's something of interest, possibly. You have no solid reasoning why you would have taken that route.
No, I should have just jumped on Route 6. Why? Maybe I just wanted to go Water Street for the scenic route. I don't know why I went that direction.
But it wouldn't be your normal
no
routine.
I idea
okay.
why I even pulled into the Prue Boat Club parking lot.
Okay.
I wasn't
but
going mushroom hunting in a dress.
Okay, no, I don't think so. But again, you're at the boat club. You're in the parking lot. Is the last thing? Is this correct? The parking lot
yeah.
of the boat club. Okay.
Yeah.
And again, what time of the year is it?
It is the early spring. It's kind of spring. You know, it's April, not April.
Now you're wearing a dress, nylons. Was there a social event prior to this that would have made you wear? Nylons, or do you know reasoning why you were wearing that wardrobe that day?
Well, to work. I worked at the credit union. On Saturdays, we were open from 9 to noon.
So at noon o'clock, at around noon, you had left from there, somewhere around that time, found yourself, the last thing as you recall, is being at the boat club around noon.
No.
Or afternoon.
No, I went to my friend's house. She
okay.
had just moved to town. And I spent the afternoon there visiting with her. I was only going to stay a couple hours, but I ended up staying the day.
Was this the same individual that you seen last when you were in Wisconsin leaving?
No.
Back?
No, not at all. No, the last person I would have seen in Wisconsin was my boss.
Okay. So
he died 3 years ago.
Okay. So
yeah.
There's no correlation with people. Though this would have been a different route, you have some reasoning that maybe you could have done it because of just being more scenic. Did you know if you had plans for that day?
Just to visit my friend and see her new place. I was excited that she moved to town. We were talking, let's go to the pool this summer, and, you know, just having women day. You know, a woman day. That was my friend. And I got to get home now. I got stuff to do. I got plans for tomorrow with the yard and the house. And I remember definitely having a lot of things I wanted to get done around the house that
week. Now, earlier that day back at work, did you have encounters with people that may have been unusual? And this is where we'll jump back to the other story, by the way.
No, I would think not. Absolutely
okay.
not.
No one unusual or anybody that stood out. Now,
no, it was just a normal, totally normal day. Definitely normal.
Okay. Now, with this other incident, this other prior incident in 85, didn't you run into some highly unusual two individuals? This is simply yes or no.
Yeah.
You don't like. Okay, I don't want to get into too much detail.
Yes, after the next weekend, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, in this instance, back in 90, what year was it, 1990?
95.
Okay, 95, and the other one was 85, so we're talking a span of 10 years?
10 years, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, did you run into any unusual people similar to those individuals in the first instance, in the second instance? Anybody like that?
No, not that I can recall. No. I'm a social person.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you had that happen, you had mentioned you felt violated. You noticed your hosiery you had your dress. Everything seemed to be odd and unusual, twisted, backwards, and goofed up. Did you have any of the same sensations as far as sore throat or your sinuses or anything like that?
Yeah, I knew. This time I knew, you know, as soon. I can't explain it, but I had to keep it together for the kids. That was the main thing. But I knew this time. I knew what had happened to me. You know, I knew. There was a feeling of anger and violation. And I went to a doctor on this one because when I did notice right away, even in the vehicle, even in the alley, I noticed right away that there was a mark on my knee. There was pain at my right knee, and it was a triangle. So when I got home, I just ripped off those nylons. I just took them off, and I looked at that knee, and there was something embedded in my knee. And there was a total feeling of violation, total feeling. It was immense. But I knew.
So again, you take a shower, you or a bath, whatever. You notice that there's a mark on your knee or there's something wrong there, correct? The triangular shape.
I really noticed it as soon as I found myself in the alley.
Now, was it an injury? Was it a... describe it as best you can.
It's on the very... There's still a scar. There was no damage to the nylons. I kept the nylons. I went to the gynecologist. I had an appointment for the next week. I called the doctor the next day and said that I felt like something was wrong and that could I come in and see him. And I tried to be as casual without giving him too many details because you're kind of embarrassed to talk about it.
Yes.
So how are you going to tell your gynecologist, well, I had missing time, you know, and I felt violated. I asked him if he could take an emergency appointment. And when I got in there, I was like, could you look at my knee? And I had my nylons in my purse. And I said, can you explain what this is? Because I had tried to pick it out with tweezers the night before. So I was actually causing more damage to the area, but it was so embedded that there was a little bit of swelling around it, a little bit of redness.
So there was a raised, so what we're talking about is a discoloration, a red area, a raised area? Give me some, in the most simplest details of what we're looking at, put it into words because we can't see it.
It was a triangular, tiny triangular shape.
Now, size-wise, give us an idea of size.
Like a pinpoint, marker point.
Okay, so a marker point.
More of a marker point.
A 32nd or a 64th of an inch, or maybe even smaller than that, or something in that range?
Very, very small, like a piece of grit or gravel was in there, a triangular shape cut, though. In there. I don't know what was in there, if it was triangular shape, but there was something embedded in my knee and there was slight redness when I took off the nylons. I knew something was wrong with my knee. There was no pain like I'd fallen down. And when I got to the doctor and had him look, I said, what do you think this is? What is that on my knee? And he says, well, it looks like there's something in there. You know, there's a little redness, a little swelling. It's triangular shaped. It was triangular with the point down on the triangle. He had, you know, kind of squeezed it. He kind of looked at it. He goes, it's like you got gravel embedded. And I said, well, I got my nylons. Can gravel go through nylons? And these were the no-nonsense nylons. Wouldn't there be, like, a hole through the nylons?
Right.
You know, these are not fishnets. These are nylons. How did, you know, and if I fell on gravel, how did just one little bit get in there? Why isn't there no scraping in and around the knee? he thought it was unusual. He checked me. I was fine. There was nothing really left to say, you know, but this time I wanted somebody to see it.
Oh, sure.
Something in my body.
Now, was there any other oddities, unusual, anything, abnormalities whatsoever?
I was this time I think I was more aware. You know, I didn't have my mom to call at this point. I had talked to a few people about it. People pretty much laugh at that sort of thing. So, you know, the internet was kind of new to our household, and I remember at that point I started going on the internet, and I started doing a little bit of research. And it was strange because the same mark on my knee was found on the internet. And that's when I started thinking, I'm not alone. There's other people that have had these marks found on their body, and that there's other people that have missing time. That helped me in the sense that at least there was some kind of explanation. I'm very analytical. I had to have an answer. But you're too embarrassed, and then you're at the point where you're angry. You don't want this to happen. I was too busy in my life. Now, I was raising my children, and everything else in my life was pretty much perfect.
Now,
and I was angry that was done to me. I was violated,
sure,
and angry.
Now, you woke up, and when you woke up, do you recall, again, you felt parched, you felt thirsty, you had the same sensation, the same pain. By any chance, pardon me? Not as bad?
Not as bad the second time. That was not really the issue. The issue was what was in my knee, and why is it Sunday, and what happened, and, you know, this time I know for sure.
Now,
you know,
what it is,
you're not a fluke.
You actually have pain going on in your knee.
It wasn't so much pain. There wasn't. That's what I mean. It's like if I would have fallen, there would have been pain. It wasn't painful. You know, only if I picked at it with the tweezers, only if the doctor squeezed on it. That was the only time, you know, that there was some sensation. But you could almost see that little bit, but he couldn't get it out. And we decided just leave it there, you know. So I guess it's there. It always has been there.
And again, this is your right knee, correct?
The right knee, correct.
Mm-hmm. Now you're waking up. When you woke up, is there any feeling of, did you ever have any surgical procedures?
Yes, absolutely. I had surgery on my knee. I've had tonsils in my youth. I've had a toe surgery. The knee surgery was the big one, and then given birth twice.
Which knee was it that it was operated on?
Yes, the left knee.
Okay. Now, when you come out of anesthesia, if you ever, obviously, have gone under general anesthesia, there's a certain, you could almost taste, feel in each breath some aspect of irritation, also the sensation and smell in some instances of the anesthetic.
Yes.
Now, anything like that when you woke up, anything that you can recall?
Well, Sam,
again, that's a very leading question, but the thing is, I wanted to get to a point of having you analyze that point. Is there anything in particular, sensation, smell, anything?
Yeah, it's a strange taste in your mouth, but I can't even walk in hospitals. I have a terrible fear of needles. It's that same thing that causes fear inside of me is anything with doctors. Dentists and gynecologists don't bother me, but actual needles and hospitals do.
We're talking about the second episode she had, and this took place in 1995, 10 years later, from her first. And you had mentioned you were getting into some of the sensations that were, you had the pain in your knee, you feel there's something in it now, and that's something we could actually test for. The other thing is the sensation, again, of feelings that, you know, parched, and there was something may have been in your throat, irritating your throat, your sinuses. The other thing that we were talking about is a possibility of some sort of taste or scent, and we were talking about anesthetics. Give me an idea of what you were tasting or feeling. Is there give me some description of that.
That's a tough one, Sam. It really is. You're talking to a woman that is so phobic. It started in my teen years. It has escalated. I'm a 50-year-old woman now, and I have a terrible fear of needles, doctors, hospitals. Whenever I smell a hospital with whatever they're cleaning with or whatever that smell is in a hospital, or even anesthesia associated with needles of any kind, I go into panic mode. I'm fear. It took 3 nurses to hold me down for my last blood test. It's strange, my daughter's the same way. My female dog is the same way. It's like a female thing in our family. I don't know what that is, because the males have no problem, you know? I don't know how I gave birth, I have no clue how I got through that. You know, you do what you gotta do when it comes to medical, but I have the extreme phobia. And it is escalated. It's always been there, I think. But so associating that smell, fear, disorientation, maybe. Did I smell anything? Did I have a taste in my mouth? I don't know if that was my actual thought when I was in that alley.
So I'm just trying to figure out, when I wake up, let's say, for instance, every morning, feels like someone just tromped through, like an army just tromped through my mouth. I have
no idea what they were.
You know, it was just, you know, it's just.
So the question, did I have morning mouth? Yes. I think that was the morning mouth, you know. In 85, like I said, I couldn't brush my teeth enough. And in 95, it was the same thing. You feel grubby, you scrub. I'm an everyday shower person. And I don't really go a day without showering. I'm very clean, and I know the feeling of being grubby.
Now, here you are. You were at the boat, again, what was that called, the area we're at?
It's down by Water Street in Peru, Illinois. It's the Peru Boat Club. There's a railroad track that runs in the back of it, and the Illinois River is there. And if you go down a trail, there's mushroom hunting down there. I used to mushroom hunt.
And now you knew the area, or you know the area.
Yeah.
And now you don't recall having that being a point of destination that you're going to go there that day. You just found yourself there, as you recall yourself being the last place, as you last place recall. Are you certain you were there?
I'm certain I was there.
Okay, did you have any conversations with anybody in and around the area?
None.
Did you notice anybody in and around the area?
No.
Okay, again, you have a scenario where you're the only person in and about an area, and all of a sudden time just, boom, seems to vanish.
That's pretty much it.
Any unusual disturbance, unusual activity, a light, obviously no people, a sound, an odor, a sensation prior to you waking up?
Well, you feel as though, I don't know if I could smell myself or, you know, have any, you know, feeling other than you've been asleep, I guess. You know, you just want to get a shower. You want to get a cup of coffee. You want to have a cigarette. Your mouth is dry. You know, why are you wearing these clothes? There's the thoughts that go through your head. Why am I in the alley? You know.
Now, is the car running? Is the car parked? Is it in park?
The car was actually running in 95 in the alley. That's what I thought. I didn't remember driving over there, and I was still thinking it was Saturday early evening. The car was running.
Okay.
So I
now
didn't have
car...
to put it on like in 85.
Now, what was the scenario with the gas? Do you recall that?
No, I didn't even consider gas.
Okay, you didn't look at the gas.
I've been driving for a day. I know that at the time I was certain that I hadn't used a bunch of gas or any money. I was just going from my friend's house to home, which was only a few miles.
But you didn't recall, say, for instance, the very next day when you did wake up and you got back home, and then all of a sudden the next time you had to fill up to say, wow, I went through a lot of gas.
No, there was none of that. It wasn't like I was driving around, you know.
Okay.
So I know that much, you know. Like I said, and I was very aware that this was a missing time. You know, the second time you just know. Now what the heck happened? You know, this time I had a visual on something with my body. I could feel the strangeness. I knew that I just felt violated, almost like I was raped. If you want to put it that way.
Right.
I'm feeling a rape.
Now,
yeah,
it felt like you were truly violated for certain that second time.
Well, you know, you figure you were knocked on the head and raped and must have been thrown in gravel, but you're not damaged in any other way.
Right.
You know?
Now, did you have, did you, again, during the course of the day, no unusual people that you recall, no unusual sets of circumstances in the course of that day that seemed to stand out?
No, nothing that really stood out, you know.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I thought about that too. You know, I think if an introverted person were asked that question, it would stand out. Someone who's social like me, I talk to everybody. You know, I make friends with the gas station, you know, the grocery store, everywhere I go. So for me, being an extroverted social person, no encounter to me is very strange, you know?
Right. Now, so you have this obvious, unusual indentation in the knee, or what do you want to call it? Something embedded. Yeah, something in there. You found, okay. Now let's say, now your children, did they notice anything unusual about you? Your mother, anything during that period of time?
I know that at that point, you know, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be honest and open with my kids. But I remember at that time thinking, even though they were a little bit younger, I did start kind of talking to them about what I was researching. And, of course, we make jokes about it. And in fact, it was at that time I said, I think my daughter's a hybrid. You know, I started joking with friends. I had to make light of it. I had to make some kind of peace with it. But I also had, you know, this feeling that I don't ever want this to happen again. This can never happen again. But then I thought that in 85.
Right.
You
now,
know, so,
after this event, did you ever have a time loss period that you recall?
No, nothing that I can recall. It was years later. In fact, that's how I met you, Sam, that, I mean, I always look. You know, I wanted to be able to see, to get proof for myself. And I always looked at the night sky, always hoping to see something, you know, so I could, you know, validate, you know, that if I could see it, I would know.
Yes.
That it's real, you know.
Well, here's one for you. Now, you've had these experiences. You've had time loss. Can you recall any scenario of time gained?
Time gained. Wow, that's a good one, Sam. I don't know. I'd have to really think on that one. Time, I don't know. I'm always feeling like I never have enough time to get things done.
So you'll never squabble or make an issue about time gained.
Never. Nothing that I can think of offhand, really. Yeah.
Well, you're one.
Enough time to get things done.
You're one very busy person. I know
I
that.
Try to be. Yes, I do.
Well, I'm thinking here, if you can, during that period of time, if you could just, you know, but then again, that would have been something that stood out. And again, I don't want to lead too much, even though this is just a radio interview. It's not an interview. We already did that many times over. And again, for those people who would like to read more about this case, they can read it in Open Minds. Which edition was that?
It's the June-July issue.
And who was the author? The editor,
Bradford Evans.
Okay. You also, we've also touched base with some other individuals pertaining to this case. And it always amazes me. Time loss cases are ones that I just find very interesting. Did you find any unusual aspects or any things that any something that could fall into the line of evidence that, you know, say, for instance, you didn't smoke your cigarettes during that period of time, you had extra cigarettes. Anything else that would fall or add value to the time loss scenario?
I wish, you know, I wish that there was more. I've considered the therapy, the hypnotist. I somehow have been afraid of that. I think that I enjoy denial in the sense. I've enjoyed my periods of denial, but it also woke me up. It changed me forever. I think that it opened my mind, let's put it that way. I changed, and my whole character changed after my experiences. I opened my mind to religion and philosophy, but there is, I don't get a bad feeling from it other than the feeling of violation. I think that whatever happened to me, is it man-made? Is it government? Is it aliens? I don't know, but I know that whatever happened to me has kept me healthy, despite family illnesses that are hereditary. I think that whatever happened to me changed my mind and my perspective, made me a better person, so to say.
Now, you never had any lapses of memory, per se, something like this, lapses of time or anything that would really alarm you other than these two instances. Okay,
no.
Very interesting. Do you find, now during that period of time, do you have any health issues as far as falling asleep randomly?
I suffer from insomnia pretty much for as long as I can remember. I've always been a night person. My clock is night clock. My daughter's clock is a night clock. And I know other people that have a night clock, whether it's insomnia or whether it's an actual night clock, I don't know. Insomnia, I don't like the dark. I don't like, you know, I'm not afraid of the dark in the sense, but I don't like to not know exactly what I'm doing at exactly what time. So I'm
right.
Always particular for time anyway.
Okay.
You know,
but you don't find yourself
at letting people know where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Right, but you don't, let's say, for instance, sleep deprivation, where you would, under a scenario of stress and sleep deprivation, you will have...
You get a little bit of that, absolutely.
Oh, you'll just conk right out. I've now personally experienced it, and I've dealt with people that have had that, but that doesn't seem to be the case here, evidently.
No, I think as we get older, you know, our sleep is more important to us. At the time I was much younger, I'm hypersensitive anyway. I have a lot of energy in my body, always have. People say I'm very energetic now. I don't see it. You know, I wish I had more energy.
Oh, no, you're energetic, believe me.
Oh, okay. Anybody that knows me thinks that I am, you know, especially the line of work I do now. But I think I've got like a deviated septum thing going on there. But I don't have any cancers, any diabetes, or any kidney.
My concern was, say, for instance, sleep apnea with a deviated septum.
I have that a little bit, yeah.
Right. A lack of oxygen will cause. There's different rational explanations.
Yeah.
But to lose a day and a half, I'm sorry, that doesn't come into play. To lose 24 hours, that doesn't come into play. The other thing, of course, and I've had cases where people have been just Mickey, just knocked out. But this wasn't the case. You weren't socializing prior to that, drinking or whatever, and found yourself vulnerable or even in a position where you could be vulnerable to be?
No, I'm allergic to drugs and alcohol, actually. Yeah. I can only take Tylenol. Can't even take ibuprofen.
Okay.
I've always had a reaction to those things, always.
So I'm just going through this on the air. We've done this before. We've gone through, you know, the usual things that we have to look at. So we are left with a mystery any way we look with it, my friend. So, Carla, I just thank you immensely for your time, and a pleasure to talk to you. And, of course, I get to see you now and then. And anything else you could remember at any given period of time, please make it a point to bring it to the show. This is Thresholds into Other Realms. This is Sam Maranto with Carla. We'll be right back.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit UFO-info.com.
With the month of October and Halloween fast approaching, we want you, the listener, to share your creepy stories with us. Call us, email us, text us your personal story, your local legends and folklore. Every week in October, we'll read your story on air. You can even read it yourself if you're not afraid. Call or text us at 708-966-9UFO. 708-966-9836. Or email John directly at ghost1@bachelors-grove.com. Thank you, and we look forward to your stories.
Okay, we hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We'll be back next week with a brand new show Friday nights, 10 to 11 on EdgeOnAir.com or UFO-info.com, Sunday nights, 7:30. So, hey, Friday or Sunday, whatever you can do, just get here. Somehow listen to the show. We'll be back next week. See you then.